Welcome to the Fourth Dimension with Toby C., where participants dare to disclose bizarre experiences that occur in early recovery. The battle between good and evil, of God and of the occult. The psychic challenges we all encounter when trying to do the right thing. Now, here's Toby.
Here's Toby. Yeah, I'm back. Can't keep a good mouth down. I'm here with Bruce. Bruce T. Hey, Bruce, what's going on?
Hey, Toby. Glad to be here today. Glad to see you again.
Yep. And by the way, if you're joining us for the first time, welcome. If you're coming back for another episode of The Fourth Dimension, I want to remind you that this is a concept show. Yeah, it's one of thousands of shows about recovery out there. And yeah, we do talk about God. But actually, the focus of this show is something different. The focus of this show is evil, is Satan, is the devil, is the antithesis of evil. Why? Why do we talk about the devil and evil on this show? I'll tell you why. Because the greatest trick the devil could ever pull is convincing the world he didn't exist. There it is. You know, the most dangerous devil is the one you cannot see. And that's why we're here to talk about that. Why do we want to talk about the devil? Well, I'll tell you exactly why we want to talk about the devil and Satan or negative paranormal energy or the fallen angel, whatever you want to call it. Because if the figure of the devil is missing, then one also loses sight of the figure of God itself or himself. There it is. See, the devil doesn't want us to pay attention to him, because if we deny the existence of evil, then the existence of a loving, protective, benevolent God is less relevant and more abstract. How about that for an opening monologue, Bruce?
I like it.
To get y'all warmed up here?
Yes.
All right. What we're going to be doing today, as we do every show, if Bruce is willing, is we want to take a calm, objective journey back in time to his earliest memories of trying to get better. You can call it recovery. Just whenever we're suffering and we're in misery, the moment we try to get better, you can call it recovery. And why don't you take us back to your memories of the very beginning, you know, and maybe it was even before you dabbled in a specific program or rehab. Just you know, help us visualize it and feel it, Bruce.
Well, after a number of years of drinking and other things, it came to the point where I was hopeless, alone, and I knew I couldn't stop. And I made that call, and knowing full well what I really wanted was a validation that I was hopeless. I wasn't looking for help because I knew I was hopeless. So I figured the people on the other end of the line, or whoever I talked to, would tell me after I told them my story, say, "Oh yeah, we can't help you. Just go and die, live in the weeds, or whatever." And they didn't say that. So it started my journey, but I had known such, I guess we're talking about the devil or evil. I've lived with that for so long that the concept of God, there was no God. I'd searched in God. I'd searched all religions. I'd read all the books. I'd tried everything possibly to find some way to stop drinking. And I knew that it wasn't going to happen until I came in and I met some people that said, you don't have to do that anymore. You don't have to drink anymore. You don't have to live that way anymore. And I was interested. It perked my interest. And so, you know, they talked about drinking and so forth. And then it came to where then there was God. Somewhere around this time, they started talking about God. And I went, oh, this isn't going to work.
How interesting. I want you to hold that thought for a minute. So in the very beginning, one of the first messages you got, Bruce, was that you don't have to drink anymore, which is kind of a metaphor for you're possessed by something that you have no control over. But they didn't say that, did they? They didn't say that you were possessed. They didn't say that you had some demon in you. They didn't say anything about evil or the devil or Satan, did they? But they offered up a solution, and the solution was God, wasn't it?
Correct.
How interesting.
Yeah. So I was searching for God in these early days, months, and I grasped onto, I called it cosmic glue. And cosmic glue for me was I could see the sun come up every day and the sun go down, the moon goes around the earth, the earth spins at a constant speed, the speed of light is 186,000 miles per second, spring, winter, fall, summer, everything is run by nature. And it's all the same time. It's all run by something. Something runs nature. It's all consistent. But my problem is this force which runs everything, which we call nature, is it conscious? If it's conscious, then it's God. If it's not, it's something else. And so I wrestled with that for a long time and called it cosmic glue.
Fine. Hold that thought again. So what you're saying was you were wrestling with the concept of God. Maybe you were wrestling with something called God consciousness, right? They talk about acquiring God consciousness, and you were still trying to figure it out, weren't you?
Yes, yes. It was difficult. It was very difficult because I'd lived in fear and anger and resentment for so long that it was like trying to get rid of my skin.
Yeah. Hey, let me ask you this. If whoever they were that you were listening to in early recovery had said, Bruce, you might be suffering from a condition which only a spiritual experience will conquer. You know, you're possessed by a demon. You know, your actions in your life now are not under your control anymore. They're under demonic control, something evil. If they had really painted the picture a little bit more clearly, would you have been wrestling with the God factor as much? What do you think?
I think it would have scared the hell out of me.
Hey, by the way, if you're just joining us, I'm Toby C. We're here with Bruce T. We're talking about evil resistance in early recovery. That's the theme of our show. It's called The Fourth Dimension. You know, and we try to open our minds beyond the limitations of a three-dimensional world. We try to open our minds to not only the presence of a loving God who wants to keep us safe and protected, but also to the presence of evil that was there the whole time, just waiting for us to spring the trap so it could amplify and magnify our poor self-centered decisions. So there it is. Didn't mean to interrupt you there, Bruce, but I'm so into this. Please, go ahead.
So as this went along, I was going to meetings and I began to think that I'm going, this isn't going to work for me. This isn't going to work for me. I'm not like this. I'm different. And this is where the evil part came in because my head was wrestling with me all the time, telling me, you know, you're no good. You'll know you'll never stop drinking. You'll know that you can't do this. You know that no one likes you. You know that you're a failure. You know you're hopeless. And just, it was this constant bombardment of all this negativity. And I went to a meeting one day and I was going like, this is my last meeting. I just can't handle this anymore. And this guy stood up in the meeting and started beating on the table and screaming at everybody and telling them that he drank more than they did and they don't know how to drink and they're just a bunch of losers and you don't know what you're talking about and to hell with you all, and walked out. And I went, that's exactly how I feel. And I felt, and that was my first breakthrough where I went like, maybe I am like these people. And maybe there is some hope for me where I can, you know, not drink again. But the concept of a God was, I began to call it God about that time, just so that I could converse with other people on a level of what does God mean to you? How do you deal with this? And it was, it just opened up a little bit. It just opened up very, very small, because I was very apprehensive about everybody. I didn't believe everybody, I didn't believe anybody had over 30 days. I thought that was a lie. It just was obvious that they were still drinking to me. And I didn't trust anybody. So I really had problems with trust and truth, because I hadn't, that I'd lived with that for so long that that's what I believed.
How interesting. This man who was pounding on the table and acting out and all that, that was a moment that you started to have some association with the group and maybe opened your mind to this association that maybe I do belong here. Maybe, just maybe, that little mustard seed of faith that maybe there is a God, and one that's a God for me too. What do you think at that moment?
Yes. I firmly believe that it just, like you say, the mustard seed. I didn't realize it at the time, but I felt more comfortable at that time. I was going like, you know, I feel there's somebody that I absolutely relate to, and I feel like, and I started trying to communicate with something. I didn't know what it was, and that was interesting too. I started talking to God on a, like a person, mm-hmm. instead of, I used to pray. I really don't like the word prayer, because I think it's like petition. I really talk to God now, like I'm talking to Toby. I talk to God all day long, every day, just about what's going on. You know, why is it so hot? Why is it summer? Why are the mountains high? Why, you know?
I love it. Before we break here, Bruce, I just want to illuminate one interesting thing that you mentioned. How often can we see in others what we're incapable of seeing in ourselves? And that moment that you saw evil being transmuted from this man, and you could relate to that, you were all of a sudden able, possibly, to identify and connect with the evil that was within you that you could not see, but it was a reflection of this man in the room. And all of a sudden, you got the message, didn't you?
Most definitely.
Yeah, I love it. Most fantastic. Definitely. When we come back after this break with Bruce, we're going to continue on our magical mystery tour back in time, you know, to our earliest memories of recovery, especially when it comes to something called cleaning house, you know, putting your hand in the hand of another man, a sponsor, and really cleaning house and emptying our vessel, emptying our house, kicking something out of our house that's evil. And there's consequences for not replacing and filling that empty vessel, that empty house, right, Bruce?
We'll find out.
That's right. We'll be right back. Toby C., The Fourth Dimension, here with Bruce T. Stand by.
Then please visit us at itmtoby.com.
Allowing the imagination to take us places we might be afraid to go. You are entering the fourth dimension with Toby C. There is no such thing as coincidences. Here's Toby.
Hey, I want everybody to remember that, you know, this is not a show about the devil. It's not about Satan. It's about overcoming drug abuse, alcohol abuse, compulsive shopping, deviant sex, gambling, overeating, whatever you're doing to make your life miserable, okay? The moment many of us try to emerge from that suffering, that bondage of self, something interferes. And that's exactly the nature of this show. We're talking about evil resistance in early recovery with Bruce. We're talking about the early meetings, Bruce, in the very beginning. What was going on?
Hey, Toby. We're back. So I was talking about, I'm wrestling with God at this time, and I began to call it God after cosmic glue. And now my head is telling me that, who am I? And what's going to become of my life? Excuse me. And I'm going to have to get, you know, my friends, my so-called friends who drink excessively, because that's the only kind of friends I had, are now going to be gone, and I'm going to be alone. What am I going to fill this gap with? And it began to be, then fear set in, and I began to hear like, well, you don't want to live that way. And what's life without alcohol? That doesn't sound like a very good life. You won't be happy. You won't be laughing. You won't have friends. And I started wrestling with, what would my life be like not drinking? Well, I never knew what it was like to live without drinking. So
it was your friend, wasn't it? It was your companion, wasn't it?
Absolutely. And it was my only friend. If I didn't have it, then I didn't have anything. And now you're telling me that I can't.
That I have to give up my only friend who was always there for me and never let me down. That spirit. Right?
It never let me down, because once I drank, everything was okay.
That's right.
and now, so
if I'm going to go ahead and abandon this, then I need to replace it with something. And there's the big dilemma that so many people hit in early recovery. I've heard it referred to as no man's land. What do you think?
Yes. And I don't know how you, and that's one of the hardest things when I talk to another alcoholic, is trying to tell them what it's like to live without alcohol or drugs. Because if you haven't done it, how are you supposed to know what that's like? And I had a lot of fear what it was like, because I didn't know what it was like. Am I going to be able to dance? Am I going to be able to surf? Am I going to be able to ski? Am I going to be able to hold a job?
Perfect. Hold that thought. So what you're talking about is you had developed an absolute core dependence on alcohol. And it wasn't at a chemical level. This was your lifestyle. This is all tied into your identity. Everything about you, right?
Everything about me. I didn't realize it until later on, but I never ate at a restaurant that didn't serve alcohol. I just wouldn't do it. I'd always eat at pizza joints or a restaurant that served alcohol, because that's just the way it was. I didn't realize that until later on. But alcohol would permeate my, and I didn't realize how much I really drank. I don't know about other people, but I didn't have anybody to compare to how much I was drinking. And when I stopped drinking and I started talking to people about how much I drank, it was sort of mortifying, because I thought everybody drank huge amounts of alcohol every day, all night. And I used to wake up in the middle of the night and think I was thirsty, and I'd have a six pack and then go back to bed or take a couple shots. And I just thought that was just, I thought everybody did that. I didn't talk to anybody about it, but I just figured they did the same thing I did, because I
saw. That was your normal. That was the horse you'd been riding, and that was it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And the reason why I bring up that horse, Bruce, is because you were asked to change horses in midstream and to get on a new horse.
Yeah.
and like so many of us, we're kind of reluctant to get on this new horse. We know the old horse that we've been riding, man. We don't know this new horse. So a lot of us end up just kind of just getting off both horses and wading through the water and hanging out in the stream.
Yeah.
And go ahead.
So I went along, and by taking away all this fear, anxiety, and alcohol, it was scary at the beginning, but because my head started talking louder and telling me that, what are you doing? Why are you doing this? And it was terrifying.
It says, Bruce, you don't want to get on this new horse. This is a mistake. Don't do it. It's a trick. I got to tell you, and that tricking, you know, is a message. And that message sometimes does not come from within. It's an external message. When we come back with Bruce T., we're going to be talking about evil resistance, the things that happen that discourage us from getting on that new horse and taking a new ride in sobriety. How about that? Toby C., The Fourth Dimension. Be right back with Bruce T.
Then please visit us at itmtoby.com.
Making sense out of nonsense. Making you as curious and uncomfortable as possible with the truth. You've landed in the fourth dimension with Toby C.
All right. Listen, we're just trying to have a healthy and balanced outlook, not only on God, but on Satan, on the antithesis of God, okay? You know, remember, you know, the greatest trick the devil could ever pull is convincing the world he didn't exist. And for us to deny the existence of evil, to deny that there's possibly evil present, is to possibly deny the existence and the presence of the antithesis of evil, and that's God. And again, when we fail to really give credit where credit is due, that's exactly where the devil wants us. Remember, you know, the devil wants us to blame him, blame her, blame it, blame ourselves, blame God, blame anything and anybody on our agony and our misery except him. And this show, my friend, is about the Garden of Eden. But we're not here to talk about Adam and Eve. We're not here to talk about the forbidden fruit. We're here to talk about the snake. Okay? That's it. Bruce, try to objectively point out where the snake was for you in early recovery when you were first coming into the rooms and what the feeling was like. This whole quandary of God consciousness and help from a higher power. It was a pretty confusing journey in the very beginning, wasn't it?
Absolutely, Toby. I listened to the people in AA, and as you said, I was very, very confused because I'd been to many religions looking for, quote, God, and I knew that didn't work. And I began this horse thing. So I'm riding my horse into AA, and I've been in that saddle. It fits me fine. Sure, it's had rough, but I know this horse. And now they're telling me, get off this horse, get on this horse.
In midstream.
And you're going to have a better life, and everything's going to be wonderful, and you'll love it. And I'm going like, how do I know that? How do I know this? I'm giving up misery and drinking and going to jail and all this stuff. I know this stuff. And now you're telling me, oh, your life's going to be great. You're going to have these people love you. And I'm going, well, maybe I won't like that.
Oh, and by the way, they're telling you that you can't have one foot in one stirrup on one horse and another foot in another stirrup on the other horse. It's called half measures, and they avail us nothing. You got to get off that horse or stay on it, right?
I heard that. Yeah. And that was my dilemma. Is like, once I got off one horse, I was going to get on the other horse. In my mind, I could not get back on my old horse. I had to ride the new horse and where it was going to take me, and I had to do whatever was going to be done. And it was fearful. I mean, it's fear, as crazy as that may sound, to give up all the misery and heartache and getting beat up and beating people up and divorces and car crashes and everything, to give all that up for something that I don't know, but people are just telling me it's going to be great. And it says so in the book. It's for some, this is a hard choice.
It's called faith.
Yeah.
And when you have a history of fear, moving into a place of faith isn't so easy, is it, Bruce?
No, it's for me, it wasn't. And, I started talking, and then I learned in AA that a lot of people really didn't care about whether, you know, what I was doing. They were involved with their own demons or whatever their road to recovery was, and I had to find, search out the people that were willing to help me, who I trusted. I got some people at the beginning who were, had ulterior motives or did not really believe in the concept of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it took me a while to find the people that were really working the program and what the program was. I had no idea what this was all about, the steps. What does that mean? What is a higher power? And that higher power was, you know, and then it says in the book, the purpose of Alcoholics Anonymous is for you to find a power greater than yourself, which will solve all your problems.
They're talking about the new horse is what they're talking about. They're talking about you getting off the old horse and getting on that new horse. Bruce, do you remember anything or anybody or any action or activity or event discouraging you and telling you, you don't want to get off this horse. You don't want to get off this old horse, man. This new horse is not the right horse for you, Bruce. Beware, Bruce. Don't do it. It's a trick, Bruce. Do you ever remember that? Any discouraging events or moments or messages?
Absolutely. I mean, my head was substituted. You know, all I did was look for differences at that time. I like, you know, that person's too tall, they're too fat, they're too short, they're too old, they're too young.
Loving it. You're talking about being in judgment.
Yeah. And I couldn't, and I'm not trying to relate to anybody. I'm just looking for the differences.
Beautiful. You're talking about the narrow mind. That's exactly where the devil wants us. The devil wants us to have a narrow mind and to be in judgment. Yes. Absolutely.
Yes.
And what a compelling reason to stay on the old horse.
Yeah. It's comfortable, even though in my misery, I knew it. I knew it well. So I had to make that choice. And I had to get divorced. I had to get rid of a business. I had to do, and I made that decision to get on that horse wherever it was going to lead and give it a try, because I finally made that decision that I didn't want to ride that old horse anymore. It was too bad. It was just horrible. It was horrible.
So what you're talking about, Bruce, is the leap of faith. There was a leap of faith. You jumped off the old horse finally, and it was a real leap of faith to get completely on this new horse. And really, the metaphor of this leap of faith on the new horse that Bruce is describing is when we trust God, we trust the process. We're willing to put our hand in the hand of another man and do something called clean house to really get a profound understanding and a clear recognition of what's going on and to empty our vessel. Were you able to finally clean house and empty your vessel for the first time when you finally jumped on that new horse?
I tried.
Well, the best of your ability.
The best of my ability, because another thing from growing up, I mean, the word surrender was not part of my vocabulary. I was taught from an early age, never surrender. And, you know, the Alamo, they all died, they never surrendered, and John Wayne, and et cetera, et cetera. And I didn't like the word asking for help. I mean, I was taught if you ask for help, you're weak.
I love it. You know what you're describing? This attitude of not wanting to surrender and this reluctance to ask for help is it's our survivalist instinctive mentality. Okay, we're survivalists. Of course, we're not going to ask for help. We're gonna depend on ourselves and our own wit first. All right, stay away from the predator and not become prey. But there it is. You know this. This reluctance, and but you overcame this reluctance, and you did clean house to the best of your ability in early recovery. When you got on this new horse for the best of your ability, and you cleaned house, in the very beginning, did you feel the presence of God come into you? Did you feel evil and uncertainty and fear leave you? Do you feel like your house was being cleaned? Do you feel as though you're emptying your vessel a little bit and moving some bad stuff out of there? What do you think?
Yeah, well, there was proof because I wasn't drinking.
There you go.
and that never happened before. I was so happy that I had...
That's a demonstration of faith right there. Yeah. I'm not drinking. Something must be working.
Something must be working, man. I remember I got a couple of days and this is different than a week and a month. I mean, I look back and I don't think I was ever sober since the time I was 13. I mean, I always managed to have alcohol around me and have it. And I didn't know that either.
So your behavior changed. You stopped drinking. Hey, let me ask you this. If there was a devil, if there was Satan, if there was some energy that did not have your best interest at heart, was it happy that you are not drinking anymore? Hell no.
Hell no.
You know? And do you remember any little interference it was thrown out there when you were putting together some time, man? Do you remember any little bumps in the road, any little baited traps that he threw out there for you that you might have sprung or narrowly missed? What do you think?
Well, I was going like, this is taking too much time.
There it is. Impatience. Yeah. Impatience.
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah. So I was, I'm going like, you have to go all these meetings all the time. You have to call your sponsor and you have to do the steps. I'm going like, I don't know if I have enough time to do all this. And how well do you want to get? I mean, halfway well sounds pretty good.
Interesting. So what you're talking about are Satan's, a few of his wonderful weapons. One is boredom. One is impatience. The other is intolerance. These are all things that we experience in early recovery, gang, right? I experienced it. Sounds like you experienced it. Mm-hmm. We're on this new horse. We're kind of getting our sea legs, trying to figure this out. And we experience boredom and anger and intolerance, tapping our foot. Come on. Let's get, Yeah, there it is.
Yeah, it was all new because... First, I didn't believe people really cared about, I believed everybody just cared about themselves, period. And here I'm coming in and I'm listening to people and I'm pretty jaded as thinking, everybody's full of baloney here. This isn't really how they really think, and they're being nice and they want you to come back and go to coffee and all this stuff. And I'm going like, I'm not buying it right now, but I began to open up the crack a little bit right there where I started. I mean, well, I started thinking maybe some of these people are really, really believe this, and that was another little, I'm going like, well, if they believe this, maybe I can believe this. I don't know how this happens, but they seem, when you meet somebody in Alcoholics Anonymous, you've really never seen them drink and you've never seen their bad side. So now you're seeing months or years of progress, and it's hard to think of them as being godless and deprived and wicked and bedeviled and with demons. And they talk about it, and then you go, oh my God, that was me. I thought that I must be like them, and it just opened up a whole where I realized I wasn't alone with this disease, and I began to realize that it is a disease.
Yeah, we're gonna break for our final segment here for the hour one, but what Bruce is talking about is the meeting. Okay, the kinship of common suffering. There's a lot of judgment. There's a lot of weird messages going on in early recovery. And believe me, the devil, Satan, is goosing those messages, believe it or not. We're going to be right back with Bruce T. I'm Toby C. The name of the show is called The Fourth Dimension, talking about evil resistance in our earliest memories of recovery, trying to get better. Stand by. Be right back.
If If you enjoy our message, then please visit us at itmtoby.com.
Are you feeling a little uncomfortable? Then you're right where you belong. In the fourth dimension with Toby C.
All right. Hey, let's be sure that, you know, they refer to alcohol as a spirit for a reason. And if you come into recovery, you might become inspired. And what's inspired mean, Bruce?
In spirit.
There you go. So you can have you can drink the spirit, or you can become filled with the spirit in a different way. You can fill your gizzard and your gut with the spirit, or you can fill your house, your soul, your mind with the spirit. All right, Bruce, take it away for the last segment of hour one. Early recovery, earliest memories. Was evil there telling you, you're on the wrong horse, baby? Talk to us.
Thanks, Toby. Yes. So using the horse model, once I got on that horse and I'm on this horse now, all of a sudden my head started taking a new track and started telling me, why are you on this horse? Why are you doing this? First of all, you're too old. I was in my 40s when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. And I see people that are coming in their 20s, and I'm going, well, and my head's telling me, well, they're going to have a good life, and yours is over. You wasted it. It's already gone. Why are you doing this now?
Stand by. Was God telling you that message, or was the devil telling you that message? Don't say it was me. Okay. don't give yourself so much credit. Where do you think it was coming from? It wasn't coming from a loving God, was it?
Oh, no.
It was coming from some dark side of you, wasn't it?
Yes. There it was a demonic presence in my mind. I believe that to be true. And then at the same time, it started judging everybody in every meeting of what they said, what they shared. Were they telling the truth? They didn't say it the right way. It was on and on to where I was hearing all these things from, as you say, the devil or whatever, that was making me just want to get off that horse and just run and not go to AA anymore and not go to any meetings because this voice was just clamoring at me.
Bruce, where was your old horse?
Gone. It's gone. It's gone. I couldn't get back on that thing.
We're kind of like men who have lost their legs. They never grow new ones, do they?
No.
And that means you can't get your old horse back either, can you?
No, no. I'd already made that decision. So I began to rotate and get to people that I really respected and who I thought were telling the truth, because I still had a problem with people who said they had years of sobriety. I knew that it just couldn't be true. And I know that's true today. But I went to people and asked for help, and some people said yes, they would help me, and I thought that was interesting too, because they use their time, and I began to tell somebody a little bit about myself, and it was difficult, and my brain was telling me, or my mind was telling me all the time, don't tell anybody.
You know why? Because maybe you were terrified of being judged. Yet how easy it was for us to judge others and yet to be terrified about being judged. How interesting. Yeah. But you did. You finally cracked open a little bit, didn't you? And trusted the process a little bit, didn't you?
Yes. And it was difficult. It was very, very difficult to trust somebody and let myself be vulnerable. I didn't want anybody to know what I'd done and how, because I remember telling people who were not alcoholics, how much I drank, because I was looking for help, and I thought I might have to, you know, I thought I was drinking too much, and I talked to people who weren't alcoholics, and I told them how much I was drinking, and they just got this look of sheer terror on their face, like, you can't be drinking that much. And I'm going like, oh, no, 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 I was just sort of kidding. I was exaggerating or something. And then I wouldn't talk to anybody about it anymore or things I'd done.
Couldn't get honest, could you?
No.
Couldn't get honest. You were in fear, weren't you?
Oh, absolutely, because I thought I was different from everybody, and I thought that I had a different problem than everybody. And if I was different, then this wasn't going to work for me. So now I've made the choice to get on this horse and try this out and give it up my old horse.
A leap of faith for somebody who is paralyzed with fear.
Yeah.
How interesting.
Yeah. So I began to tell one person, and It began to feel better. It began to feel better to tell someone what I was doing, what I was thinking, and a lot of what I was telling this person, they would laugh, and you know, I'm going like, I'm telling you that, you know, that my soul here, and you're laughing, and he was relating to, you know, that he was an alcoholic too, and that he had the same thing had happened to him, and I felt two things. One is, well, I'm not special anymore, which I really thought I was. And the other thing is, I'm going like, I'm like him. And it began to become easier and easier to talk.
Excuse me. And what you're describing, Bruce, is unity. You started to experience unity. You started to experience feeling a part of this sense of belonging, didn't you? Even in its most smallest forms. Yet evil wants to keep us feeling terminally unique and divided and separate from our brethren, right? So there it was. You were experiencing in early recovery the first glimmers of a loving God expressed through unity. But was the devil still there saying, I don't know?
Oh, yeah. Because I could always find some fault with my first sponsor. I could find a lot of fault in his life, and it wasn't, I had to put aside his life and concentrate on the message he was trying to convey towards me, because he could convey the message better than anybody that, you know, and I chose him because of this, because he could convey it well. How he ran his life was not the way I would have wanted it or thought somebody should do, but that was not what I was looking for. What I was looking for is the path to ride my horse, if you want to say. I wanted the path of how I get to a place of, like it says, the promises. I mean, the fears, where all that would go away, supposedly. I mean, I didn't know. I still say, how are you supposed to know when you never experienced it?
The answer to that question, like so many how and why questions, is answered when we clean house. When we come back with hour two with Bruce T, we're going to be talking about cleaning house. We're going to be talking about, you know, doing the inventories and really cleaning our soul and our spirit, emptying our vessel, and the interesting phenomena and obstacles that we encounter when we have an empty vessel and we fail to protect it and fill it with good things. Bruce, thank you so much. We're going to come back at hour two.
Thank you, Toby.
I'm Toby C, Fourth Dimension. Be right back.
If you enjoy our message, then please visit us at itmtoby.com.
Welcome to the Fourth Dimension with Toby C, where participants dare to disclose bizarre experiences that occur in early recovery. The battle between good and evil, of God and of the occult. The psychic challenges we all encounter when trying to do the right thing. Now, here's Toby.
Here's Toby. I'm back. Welcome to the Fourth Dimension. If it's your first time, if you're a repeat offender, welcome back. Welcome back to the Fourth Dimension. It's your not-so-typical recovery show. Yeah, we don't talk about God too much. We talk about getting better, and we talk about recovery, whatever program of recovery you're in or whatever you may be suffering from. But no, this show's a little unusual in that we talk about the greatest trick on humanity ever pulled. And the greatest trick on humanity ever pulled is to convince the world that the devil doesn't exist. How about that? We talk about evil resistance and early recovery on this show, and we're back on hour two with Bruce T. Welcome back, Bruce.
Thank you, Toby. It's good to be back.
How was your lunch?
Absolutely tasty.
Anyway, what we're going to continue doing here is talking about early recovery. Some of the things that Bruce encountered in early recovery, and I probably had similar experiences, and maybe you or your loved one can relate to this. But I got to tell you, we're not going to be talking about looking back, I can see where God was doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. No, that's not what this show is all about. This is about taking a calm, objective look back and looking at not where God was, but possibly where evil was, where Satan was, where the devil was, amplifying our bad decisions, amplifying and magnifying our self-centered motives. How about that? And so many of us experience this in early recovery, and it's a bumpy road, bumpy, bumpy road. So today we're going to continue for this hour talking about early recovery, Bruce. So where do you want to go with this hour? I think I already know. Take it away.
Well, thanks, Toby. What I wanted to talk about today was something that happened to me in early recovery, which was after I got comfortable in AA in about a year and a half, I started to meet people, and I met a couple people, and they started steering me towards a certain person and said that this person has good recovery and has a good message, and they liked going with him and to these meetings that were, I look back now and they were like private meetings. They were, not all of them were listed on the meeting list. And it was like you had to be invited to them, which I thought was, not knowing at the early sobriety, I thought it was sort of weird, but I was welcomed and made to feel comfortable. And I became part of this group. And they had a name. They had a name for it. It was called the Minute Minders. So we were Minute Minders, and this being in this group validated that I was somebody, and that I was with somebody who knew more than everybody else. And these things were sort of like underlying current of this whole group. And there was probably about 20 people that were in the Minute Minders, and the Minute Minders had their own groups. Sometimes they would go to regular meetings, open meetings, but most of the time we kept to ourselves because we knew that, I look back at it now, I didn't understand then, that our message was pure and better.
There you go. Now hold that thought, Bruce. You joined this group and you were invited to this group, and this gave you an overwhelming sense of unity, didn't it? Being invited and being part of this group gave you this sense of belonging,
yes,
didn't it? And that's what recovery is all about. So naturally, and I got to tell you, I had a similar experience, as many of us do, to somehow connect with a home group or a group that we frequently meet with. And sometimes they spin off into little private groups, but it's all about unity, isn't it?
Yes.
And there comes a point, Bruce, where this private group, all of a sudden, perhaps does not represent God as he expresses himself through the group anymore. At some point, these private groups, if we're not careful, can become unhealthy and cease to become a place where God can reveal himself through the group. Was this your experience?
Yes, Toby. So this went along, and I was happy. I got started dating one of the girls in the group, and it went along. And as I began to become more and more familiar with the main character in this group, I became friends with him, and he guided me. And then there became, after about 2 years, there became a situation where I saw that this man was, the leader of the group, was making a bad decision, a bad financial decision, based on romance or something. And I brought it to his attention that I said, well, I think you ought to look at this, because I don't think this is, I see it totally different than you're seeing it. And he told me to shut the hell up, and that I didn't know anything, and I was just a newcomer, and he had more years than me. And
he'd forgotten more than you'll ever understand.
Yeah, I heard that too. Yeah. And I was pretty well beat down and shocked by that, because I was just trying to be helpful and help him out, and here I'm getting shot down and
discouraged.
I was sort of scorned after that, and
by the group or by him or by his devotees.
He definitely scorned me, and then the devotees, yes, they began to pull away from me, and I felt like that I'd landed on this island, and all of a sudden everybody was kicking me off the island, and I had no place to go. I was all by myself again.
I love it. Hold that thought.
Okay.
If you're just joining us, I'm Toby C. The name of the show is called The Fourth Dimension. And our subject, like every show, is talking about evil resistance that so many of us encounter and experience in early recovery. And it's a bump in the road. And quite often, these experiences throw us off our trajectory of getting better and ending our misery and our suffering. And what we're talking about right now with Bruce is we're talking about the unity. You know, God, as he expresses himself through the group, God wants us to be in a group. God does not want us to be alone. At least the God of my understanding, Bruce, does not want us to isolate and be alone. He wants us to be in communion with our fellow man. Absolutely. And by the way, if you're not careful, you might have an experience like me, and you might all of a sudden experience God through the group, and God might talk to you through the group, and you might experience these things called God shots through the group. But there comes a point, quite often, if we're not careful, where the group no longer is there to glorify a power greater than ourselves individually. All of a sudden, we're there to participate in some sadistic, passive-aggressive partnership with somebody. Your group had a deity. Your group had a leader. Your group had a powerful personality that led this group.
This is true,
and,
Toby.
And was God at the end there when you took this scorning and this discouraging, you know, emotional beatdown? Was that God, or was that a test from God, or was this perhaps evil expressing himself through the group and through this person? What do you think, Bruce?
I think that's exactly what happened, because the group got disbanded after that, and everybody went their separate ways, and a lot of people got drunk or started using again or whatever. But that it was a total disconnect, because I can see now, and looking back, that I had built my sobriety on an individual who everybody had joined in with me and said that this is the word and this is the way. And I was misled.
You were alienated from your home group, weren't you? You were alienated from your home group by this private group that you joined and that grabbed a hold of you. And do you think that could have been the point where you departed from the safety and the sanctity and the protection of God, is when you left the home group and you joined this private group?
Yes, because then I went back. I tried to go back to regular meetings again, and it was very difficult at first, because I felt it's like everything had changed. What the message that I heard was changing. The atmosphere of the rooms was not the same. The people were not the same. I wasn't treated the same. No one knew who I was, because I hadn't been around. And I felt really lonely again. It was a rough time for me, and I saw some of the people from the previous group, and they were just joined and very lost also. And it took me a while to feel comfortable in Alcoholics Anonymous again, where I began to go to just regular meetings wherever they were. But I think I was really vulnerable, and I know a lot of those people were really vulnerable at that time.
What an interesting experience, and I'll bet a lot of people have something very similar. It's, you know, recovery, whether it's AA or some other program, is called a kinship of common suffering. It's where a group of people get together and they really want to get better. And what ripe pickings for the devil to go in there and sow envy and hurt and anger and confusion and bewilderment, right? And disunion. Yes. And disunity. That's exactly what evil wants to do. It's a battle. It's a battleground, isn't it?
Yes.
And so many of us, Bruce, are a little bit vulnerable in early recovery because, you know, we got that empty vessel like we talked about last hour, you know. Cleaning house is about expelling, you know, some bad energy, some bad spirit, a demon, whatever you want to call it, okay? But we gotta refill that vessel with something good. And maybe when you joined this group and you were alienated from your home group, you were denied the chance to really completely fill your vessel with something good and keep it that way. What do you think?
Yes, Toby. It was a weird experience, and as I began to go to meetings again and get a conscious contact with God and began to listen to people. It was hard listening to people again, because what they were saying was not what I heard before. Now I'm hearing true AA and a complete monologue or a complete different feed.
How interesting. Same message, same messengers, different takeaway. How interesting. We're going to be right back with Bruce T. I'm Toby C., the host of a show called The Fourth Dimension, where we talk about evil resistance, evil encounters, external things that happen that are negative and discouraging to so many of us in early recovery. Stand by. We'll be right back.
If you enjoy our message, then please visit us at itmtoby.com.
The imagination to take us places we might be afraid to go. You are entering the fourth dimension with Toby C. There is no such thing as coincidences. Here's Toby.
Okay, we're back with Bruce T. We're talking about evil resistance and early recovery. And we don't have a lot of time for the bottom of the hour, but just to be sure, you know, this is not a show about the devil. This is a show about God, okay? The reason why we talk about the devil is because the devil doesn't want us to talk about him. The devil wants us to deny his existence, its existence. Why? Because simply, if the figure of the devil is missing, then one also loses sight of the figure of God himself or itself. It's that simple. And that's what the devil wants us to think of God as being very remote, very abstract. See? There it is. But he's not. He's real and he's external. And, you know, quit blaming yourself and blaming him and her and God. And let's start looking at what happens when evil reveals himself and channels itself through other people. Bruce, take it away.
Hey, Toby. Glad to be back here. Thank you. At this time when this group, the Minute Minders, disbanded, I really had a hard time getting back into Alcoholics Anonymous. I felt lost. I felt alone. I felt bewildered. I felt disconnected. I mean, all the things that had made me want to stay were now taken away. And I was drifting. I tried to go to meetings, and it just wasn't the same. I couldn't relate anymore. It was a really bad time. And I began to have thoughts of why can't I drink? I couldn't remember why I stopped. Why was it such a big deal? It began to get really cloudy and muddy and I realized I was on a slippery slope at that point.
So you pulled away or pushed away from your home group where you should have stayed all along. Okay.
Correct.
Come to think of it.
Correct.
And that's where the devil wants us to be. The devil wants us to be out there, not close to him and close to the group. So we might just have that notion of why can't we drink? There it is. And were you hurt? And were you angry? And did you have a few damn good reasons to go out there and get loaded while you're out there, you know, floating through no man's land away from your home group? What do you think?
Yes, Toby, I began to think that because, like it says in the book, that I will not be able to bring up the pain of even a moment ago. And I couldn't remember all the things of why I stopped drinking. I mean, my story is horrendous. And if anybody heard it, they would say, this guy definitely needs to stop drinking. And at that time it was blocked in my mind. And I couldn't bring up why I was stopping drinking, why it was such a big deal. I mean, I saw people in bars and restaurants drinking a glass of wine or a beer or a cocktail, and they didn't seem to have a problem. And I'm going like, well, why was I making such a big deal out of this? I mean, I stopped when I wanted, and it became very disturbing. And I couldn't relate to anybody anymore. And I pulled away more and more and more. I said, meetings are, you know, they're too. I began to get, of course, I'm sober, so I'm getting more work and I'm busy and I'm doing things and I'm joining civic groups and I'm having fun and I'm meeting people and I'm just getting less and less contact with God and Alcoholics Anonymous.
And becoming more and more distracted.
Absolutely.
There it is. And I think one of the reasons why many of us have a home group and a rhythm is what we really have is a daily reprieve from our insanity, right? The overwhelming compulsion to drink, which is contingent upon the maintenance of our spiritual condition, which means stay close and pay attention. But something doesn't want us to pay attention. Something wants us to be distracted. And you are distracted. And you're out
Absolutely.
There. Absolutely. And you're angry. And you're hurt. And you're confused. Did a loving God, a God of your understanding, Bruce, was that a loving God that wanted you to experience that? Was that a test, some sadistic test from God? Or was this something evil that was somehow reaching you and discouraging you and keeping you in the evil three-letter question of why?
Well, I believe it was something evil because it just unraveled so fast and so ugly that before it was so wonderful, and then all of a sudden it became real ugly, real fast, and it blew my mind, to put it mildly, about how what had happened and why and how did I get here? How did I get here when everything? And then I started going back to meetings again. I tried to get that hook. But it just wasn't the same. And you can call it evil or whatever, but it started hammering on me over and over and over again.
When we come back after the bottom of the hour, we're really going to mash it out here with Bruce. He's going to tell us a wonderful experience he had in early recovery. You want to talk about evil? Oh, man, stick around. Evil resistance, evil interference, evil distraction that so many of us experience in early recovery. I'm Toby C. The name of the show is called The Fourth Dimension. We're going to be right back with Bruce T.
If you enjoy our message, then please visit us at itmtoby.com.
Making sense out of nonsense. Making you as curious and uncomfortable as possible with the truth. You've landed in the fourth dimension with Toby C.
Okay, welcome back. This show's a little unusual. This is a very unusual recovery show. We're not here to, we're here to talk about God, a God of your understanding. We might even venture into the Garden of Eden. But we're not here to talk about Adam and Eve. We're not here to talk about the forbidden fruit. We're here to talk about the snake. There it is. We're here to talk about the snake. Why do we want to talk about the snake? Well, the snake being a metaphor of evil, because we want to be sure that we're aware of the presence of evil. You know, and by the way, I love this show because we can, many of us who are calm and more or less restored to sanity to some degree, we can go back now and take a calm, objective look back, and we can actually possibly pinpoint where evil was present, even though at the time, maybe we were so distracted or so sick that we were unaware of it, right? And I'm just going to share you a quick story before I turn it over to Bruce, because we're talking about private groups that morph out of the kinship of common suffering, right? God wants us to get together for sure. God, of my understanding, I know does not want me or Bruce or anybody to be alone, right? But and wants us to be part of the group. But if we're not careful, the group, can become very healthy, can become an adjunct, can become a supplement, a complement to our recovery. And if we're not careful, we can cross the line and it can become detrimental. And I'll just give you a quick story here. When I was first back in recovery, I was going to this meeting at 4:50 a.m. in the morning, if you can believe that. I wanted to get sober in the worst way that I would go to a 4:50 a.m. meeting 6 days a week. And there was, 12 angry old men in this group, actually 11, and there was me, and I was a little younger. And they kept gushing about their private men's step study group. Oh, how they just love their private men's step study group, this, and their private men's step study. And I would hear it every single day, them gushing about what they talked about last night and how they're looking so forward to their private men's step study group. And they never invited me, Rudolph, the red-nosed drunk named Toby. They never invited me to participate in their private men's step study group. And finally, about 6 months in, I got an invitation, and I was so overjoyed. I just couldn't believe I was invited to their private men's step study group. And it was the following Tuesday. And that Monday night, the oldest, gruffiest guy in the group, he called me that Monday night, and he said that they had disbanded the private men's step study group. It was no longer in existence. So let me just give you the footnote. I was so hurt. And I was so new and so desperate to get better. What I did was I found this conference room in this office building that I was using, right? And I made a deal to use this conference room, and it seated about maybe 20 people comfortably. And I went to a couple of the early morning meetings, and I just randomly invited like 20 guys. I didn't know who any of these guys were, to this private step study group, at this conference room. And do you realize, Bruce, like I think 15 out of those 20 accepted the invitation and they showed up, And I got to tell you, it was a real compliment to my journey. It was a very positive experience. And it kind of fizzled out after about 15 or 20 of them. But some of these groups, they hang in there, and they almost take on a life of their own, don't they? Tell us about your experience now, Bruce, in some of these groups that take on a life of their own, and if we're not careful, these private kinships of common suffering can become a negative experience.
Thanks, Toby. after that experience with the Minute Minders, I started, I was traveling around to meetings, and I heard about the Pacific Group, which I didn't realize was another section of AA. And I started going, I went to the synagogue in Pacific Palisades and met and went down to 26th in Santa Monica. And they talked about Clancy and, you know, you have to be in this group and you have to go here and do this and it's the best and you got to be in. And I'm going like, I think this is what I was in before. And
the one that you just got kicked out
yeah,
of.
Yeah, they're right.
There's
yeah.
another one.
But this one's bigger. And better. And I'm going like, I don't know if this is, and I'm still dabbling in just regular AA, you know, I don't know if I want to go to regular AA. And, so I met this, girl, didn't really, you know, they were going to go see, Terry Cole Whitaker. And I don't know how many people remember that from way back when, that she was a motivational speaker.
Very charismatic, very spiritual.
Yes, very wonderful message, and had some tapes of hers, and I wanted to go see her live. And there was this group from the Pacific Group that was going to go. It was down in Santa Monica at a theater. I can't remember what theater. And so I went, and I knew this girl. Just we became, you know, we just went of the group. We just sat together on the bus and went in the theater together. And she was just a casual friend. And we listened to Terry Cole Whitaker. And this is where, you know, you say I have to watch out that my vessel was so empty at that time that Terry Cole Whitaker filled it. When I left that theater, I looked at this girl. She had an aura around her, like an angel. And I said to her, I love you. And I meant like in a physical, emotional, heartfelt, I love you. And she looked at me and said, I love you too. And you could not tell me at that time that this wasn't the girl for me. I had no idea what she did, who she was, where she was born, anything about her. But this was...
You're in the zone. You're in the zone. Bruce... At the time, did you think it was the God zone?
Absolutely. This was a spiritual experience.
Yeah. Looking back, was it maybe something other than the God zone?
Yes.
Was it possibly an evil zone that you were in? You were in the fourth dimension. It's almost like time stood still, didn't it?
Yes.
When everything stopped, you were in the zone, and you thought you were in the God zone.
I thought I was in the God zone for sure.
And you weren't.
So I started, you know, I think I moved into her house and she got pregnant. You know, that usually happens. And then it was like, I woke up and I'm going like, how did I get here? What happened? It was a bizarre experience where I came down off this, supposedly spiritual high. And it wasn't a spiritual high. It was some sort of something had possessed me, and it was now gone. And here I was with this girl, and we're gonna have a baby.
How interesting! So you just said it. You were possessed, and when the devil was done with you, he left you, didn't he?
Absolutely.
He left you, and then all of a sudden, you're there going, now what do? I got, you know. Did you have a program?
No.
Did you have a pregnant girlfriend?
Yes.
Did you have any direction in life?
No.
Were you completely, utterly baffled and confused?
Absolutely.
So was this God?
No.
Was it the devil?
I think so.
Or maybe just emptiness, man. You were back in no man's land, weren't you, Bruce?
Yes, I was vulnerable again, yeah. And
oh, by the way, I got to do a quick repeat in the middle of the long segment. Name of the show is called The Fourth Dimension. I'm Toby C. And we're with Bruce T. We're talking about evil resistance in early recovery. We're mashing it out. Hit it, Bruce.
Yep. So at this time now, I didn't know what to do. And I didn't have a sponsor. I didn't have anybody could talk to. And this girl just took the bull by the horns and took care of what she needed to take care of. And we parted ways. But there was that emptiness again where I'm going like, maybe not AA's not that for me, because I've had a couple of rough experiences here. And all I wanted to do is get sober and have a good life. And for some reason, I kept getting involved.
With the group.
With the group.
With the wrong group. Yeah. Or doing something with this group and losing a god of your understanding somewhere in this group. And it happened to you twice.
Yes.
You did this twice and you got kicked to the curb by the group.
Yes.
And it wasn't God testing you, man. It was evil expressing himself through the group with the one express intent of what? Discouraging you from getting better. Discouraging you from staying close to the right group, correct?
Correct. And I kept... I was very confused at that time, and I began to talk to some of my other friends in Alcoholics Anonymous and explained to them what had happened. And they said, well, that's not AA what you're experiencing, and that was not God or God consciousness. That was something else. And I began to go, well, maybe I did have I was possessed or had some sort of, because something was trying to get me away from Alcoholics Anonymous and God.
Hold that thought for a minute. When they said that wasn't God, that was something else.
Yes.
Did they say what the something else was, Bruce? Did they say, they just don't like to talk about evil or Satan or the devil,
no.
Don't they?
No.
They're gonna call the devil something else.
Correct.
I'm telling you, gang, it's the biggest trick the devil ever played on the world, is convincing the world that he doesn't exist. We want to call it something else.
Correct.
And it's not something else. It's evil. It's the antithesis of a loving, protecting God.
Yes. I understand that. Looking back on that, I believe that to be true. A lot of people that I got close to after this, I told them the experience and they were quite enamored, and they thought it was pretty funny what had happened to me. I mean, they said, this, what has happened is you've been pulled away in a direction that you don't even know. You need to go just regular AA, get with the people, go to meetings, listen. Don't try to be special, which I was trying to do. I was trying to find the special ones or the person who knew everything. And I think that road took me to a place where I was more vulnerable and I was listening to the wrong message. And then it took me a long time to be calm again.
Yeah. We're going to break here before our final segment of the hour. But I'm telling you, it's a bumpy road. It's a crapshoot. Who gets this? Who doesn't? Who hangs around with their empty vessel listening to the right message versus the wrong message, We just don't know. We're going to be right back finishing up hour two with Bruce T. I'm Toby C. Name of the show called The Fourth Dimension, talking about evil resistance that so many of us encounter in early recovery. Be right back.
Message, then please visit us at itmtoby.com.
Are you feeling a little uncomfortable? Then you're right where you belong, in the fourth dimension with Toby C.
Those who deny the existence of satanic malice have a lot to learn, man. Satan's out there stirring it up, man. He's not idle. Trust me. He's out there, And an idle mind is the devil's playground. Amen on that. We're just finishing up hour two with Bruce T. And Bruce, what's your takeaway here, for for somebody who's experiencing a little confusion with the group or subgroups or special groups. What do you think?
Thanks, Toby. Well, my own experience is I know that I was, we've talked about the vessel being half full or empty at this time. And it was, what was I filling it with? I was looking for something that was not real. And all I need to do was do what was put in front of me, be part of the group and talk to God. And I found a sponsor after a couple of them. And this man was one of the most humble men I knew. And he always went and he talked to everybody who was in the meeting. He shook their hand. And I was going like, why is he doing that? Why does he do that? And it was his way of being humble and being godlike and filling his vessel. And I began to listen to what he said. And his message was that God is love, and that I didn't need to search with where I when it was right there. And I began to expel these notions that I had that there was some easier, softer way that I could get this. It took a lot of work and it took a lot of humility and just showing up and listening and knowing that everybody was there was the same.
So he was telling you that the group is love and God is love, and you need to stay close to this group. And you know, how often, Bruce, so many of us who come into recovery are in recovery because we are looking for love in all the wrong places, right?
Absolutely.
And we finally find love. We find a loving God as he expresses himself through the group, the kinship of common suffering. And that's the right group. But there's something that wants to make us start looking for love again in all the wrong places, you know, outside of the group. And outside of the group is certainly looking for love from within, self-centered love, you know, or making something other than God, as he expresses himself through the group, making something or somebody else a higher power. There it is. But finally, you found the right group. You got back to the group, didn't you?
Yes, I got right back to the right group, which was, I kept thinking, if this is the right group, there's got to be something better. And that thought kept permeating through, and that was my problem before. I was always looking for something to augment what was freely given me that was perfect. And I kept saying, well, if this is good, I can make it better, and I can find somebody to help me make it better. And I found that to be not true, that the group is what it is, and it is loving, and I just need to accept that. And it was hard to understand that there wasn't somebody who was special in AA who could make me get there faster or better and have a leg up on everybody else. I would know more or something like that. And I had to, I had to be humble, and I began to fill my vessel with love and kindness. I think kindness is one of the words that I really like now. I always say God is kind, because kind is something that I don't think you get that too often. You have to work at that. You have to work at being kind. And I like being kind today. I see people being kind, and the group is kind to me. They've always accepted me. They've never chastised me, and it's where I am today. And most of the people in my group today, I mean, I know all about them, and we all know about each other, and we share things that we wouldn't share with other people. And
but you're all equal.
All equal.
You're all equal. There's no deity. There's no overwhelming, strong personality that's kind of running the show.
No.
And calling the shots.
No.
Everybody's equal, you know. And there's a pamphlet in AA called Q&A on sponsorship. And on the first page, it says the sponsors and the sponsees, they meet as equals. You know, that's what we do in recovery. So you finally found the right group. And have you become part of this group? Have you become a part of this group to the point, Bruce, where possibly God uses you as a channel, as an instrument to convey a loving message to other people who are participating or sitting in on this group? What do you think?
I believe that. I mean, I try to help everybody in the group, and I'm available to them, and I talk to a lot of people in the group after the meeting. And because of the group, when I go out in the world and talk to people in my business or my social gatherings, whether people are always asking me, why do you think that way? Why are you nice? Why do you have a good attitude? And I believe it's because I'm part of the group.
And God is expressing himself through you and the group.
Absolutely. And before it wasn't like that. It was before I had nothing. But I really firmly believe today that because of the group and because of God, that and I believe God can't come down here and talk to anybody, but he can talk through me. And I never know when, and this has happened a lot of many times to me, where I have thought that I need to call somebody. And I don't know why, but I'll call them up, and there's something traumatic happening in their lives, and I've called at the right time, and it's very weird.
Yeah, it's called intuition. We develop a sixth sense in recovery. We're going to wrap it up here. I want to thank Bruce for 2 hours of mashing out evil resistance, stories that, you know, satanic, evil, devilish experiences that so many of us have in early recovery that discourage us from getting better. And that's just where the devil wants us, you know? So, hey, stay close to God, stay close to the group, and stay close to God as he expresses himself through the group. And be mindful that the devil prowls around like a lion looking for a vulnerable spirit to devour. So stay sober and be alert and keep an eye out for evil resistance in early recovery. Thanks for joining us. I'm Toby C. at the Fourth Dimension. Thanks again, Bruce. God bless.
Thank you, Toby.
If you enjoy our message, then please visit us at itmtoby.com.